Jay Pizzy, Mosier on the beat. Look at my team, ay. Look at the ring, whoa. See what I mean, ay. You see what I mean? Look at my team, look at the ring, everything. This is a dream, all but a dream. This ain't a dream, I am a fiend for the cream, go. DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
See, I calculate. Yeah, y'all just palpitate. Whoa, if you don't calculate, get it? Get it? Calculate. Lady Justice is illustrious. I just love this. I can put this in this function and it turns up into something. And that something came from nothing. And I sold it for a button. Now I got this lovely lump sum. Guess I'll burn these bumps like buzzing, bro.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty fantasy football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley and Izzy Elkafoss.
This ain't a dream, I am a fiend.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the DTC Podcast, episode number 196, four away from 200, the big two. We've got a couple things we want to talk about. So since this is Christmas week, we want to do like a fantasy Christmas-themed podcast. We're going to talk about fantasy gifts, what gifts you were given for the season. Izzy, do you want me to start?
Yeah, do we want to talk about Tony Pollard and Ezekiel?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a gift because I mysteriously ended up with plenty of Tony Pollard shares, and it's kind of like he's under the radar. And suddenly, Tony Pollard looks better than Ezekiel Elliott, right? And then we wanted to...
Well, I don't want to say suddenly. I think suddenly, like... 10 weeks ago, suddenly, but that's just me.
Or, yeah, a year and 10 weeks ago, yep.
Well, it's also very interesting that we've gone, 14 weeks of Zeke leading the backfield. And the 1 week Tony Pollard plays against a pretty, I wouldn't say San Francisco's the best defense, but they've dealt with injuries. They're in middle of the road. I'd say they're top half, 10 to 15. And Tony Pollard has outscored Ezekiel this week higher than any single week that Zeke has had all season. So he scored 31.2 fantasy points this week. Zeke high for the season was week one at 27.
And according to my fantasy league rankings, the San Francisco 49ers going into this week were ranked sixth against the run. So that's pretty good, actually, pretty stiff.
Even better than I thought. I thought they were in the 10 to 15 range.
Yeah, and again, I know that there can be different weighting systems for different sites, but this is just the site I like to use. So, but yeah, and then it's like Tony just stepped on the field and he said, "Hey,
what's your name? Ezekiel. Hey, you know what I did last night?
You better not bring my mother into this.
You know what I did?
You better not.
I put that pie over there.
Oh,
and I your mother next to
it. You, Ezekiel."
Yeah.
Okay, so that's basically what transpired for the conversation between Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott. We're idiots.
I mean, I know I've been on the sell Zeke train leading into this, you know, in the off season, leading into the season. Every time Tony Pollard touches the ball, I am more optimistic than I am when Zeke touches the ball. I think we're fixated on what Zeke was and what we've expected of him.
Not anymore.
And certain players just, I don't know Zeke personally, but to me, he seems very aloof and doesn't strike me as a guy that's a lunch pail, work your ass off. My big thing with Zeke is he got his big contract and I don't think he's as hungry as, I know he does the feed me thing every time he gets a first down. But at what point does Dallas realize, like, we're getting more juice out of Tony? Like, if you have two lemons and one is a bigger, juicier lemon, what lemon are you going to want to squeeze?
Yeah.
The juice, right? The juicier one. The bigger, juicier one.
You like it, the juice.
You like it? Blame it on the juice.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
A little throwback. A little throwback one.
Local artist for us.
Local artist. But yeah, that's my take on that. And then you look at it and say, well, on the same token, we had Derek Carr and Mariota situation now where some people actually think Mariota is better than Derek Carr. when, and we actually got a text bragging about Mariota, and then Mariota goes ahead and throws the game away at the end of the game. Just classic Mariota fashion where he shows just enough, this is the guy that everybody was hyped about coming in. He was a huge super flex asset. And he's still ass.
Okay. That's that's enough.
Who's this guy? Just jumping in. All it took was 1 week, huh? For you to jump in, finally. This is what gets you out of the cellar?
This is the only topic that I'm willing to get out of the cellar for. This is what the entire season was culminating for me anyway, was this moment. Because who really thought Derek Carr was going to finish the season without having some kind of nick up? Nobody.
You haven't given up on Mariota, honestly?
No. And I know I'm not alone either. Okay, so technically I did have to drop him in the only league I owned him. But not because I wanted to, because I had bye week issues. But don't you worry, I'm going to be able to pick him up, I think. When this week's in the books, he'll be able to be, pickable.
You gave up on him. That sounds like giving up on him.
I absolutely had to have a quarterback for week 13.
You could have dropped someone else, bro.
Yeah. I mean, you could have.
Couldn't do it.
All right, let's go. Let's hear what your roster is.
who did you keep? You see? Okay, to be fair. Okay, here's, I will give you this. I don't believe it's a 16-team league, but it's a one quarterback league, correct?
So we actually slimmed down to 14 this offseason.
Okay. So 14-team league, one quarterback. So I get it. I mean, you can still love Mariota and not have him on a 14-team league, one quarterback. The fact that you still had him is enough. I mean, that's just pathetic. I feel bad for you. Like, that's the thing. I can't imagine being you. You know what I mean? Like, that's... Well, that's tough.
This is the team that's in the championship, so it's pretty easy being me, I gotta say.
Yeah, this is like my Josh Gordon.
Jackson Lake cut his finger open with a knife.
Oh,
he's got to go get stitches.
Oh, fuck. Sorry, dude.
That's all right.
Oh well, there's our Christmas podcast.
Oh, good luck. Good luck.
All right, Mo. The show must go on.
What? No.
We've lost the host. He is gone.
Dude.
My co-host just lost his son's finger. It's gone.
It's gone.
They're going to go fix it.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Well, looks like the show must go on without our fearless leader, but I guess destiny has its way. And Mosher, Mariota. So Derek Carr pulled his groin, full well knowing that Jackson Hurley would cut his finger so Mosher could be on the podcast in time for that, because Mariota would step in and play. Do you see how destiny works?
That's a little too tinfoil hat for me. I don't know about that.
You think that if Hurley's son wasn't going to cut his finger, you honestly think Derek Carr would have got hurt? Because insert Mariota, without Mariota, you don't jump in on the show. So let's say Derek Carr stays healthy, Jackson cuts his finger, and the show doesn't go on. We have this weird 5-minute show.
I don't know what parallel universes would and would not allow for that, but I can guarantee you that poor little boy's finger has nothing to do with the NFL. Hurley, when you listen to this later, I tried to cancel this week, but he wouldn't let me. He's forcing me on this as co-host. So I am reluctantly sitting here for you, and I hope Jackson's finger's better. But this is all your fault.
Forget his finger. Finger doesn't matter. This is your opportunity. Just like Tannehill took Mariota's job last year. Just like Mariota.
You want me to Tannehill Hurley?
Could take Derek. You could. This is your chance. What if you Tannehill'd Hurley? What if the 5,000, 6,000 people that listen to the show every week want Jonathan Mosher, not Jonathan Hurley?
Jonathan Hurley, yeah. That could be the case. Okay, well, let's play it out. Let's see what happens.
Anyways, so we were going to talk about the gifts So do you want to drive or should I be driving?
Yeah. When the host has to go in an emergency, it's like the vice president, right? You get called into duty, and now you're in the hot seat, and I'm slipping into your. I'm like the Speaker of the House. I'm the Nancy Pelosi.
Do I get to elect you?
I
is that how that works?
I'm pretty sure I was self-appointed. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But normally, if the president has his son's finger cut off and he has to leave his post,
yeah,
and the vice president becomes the president,
right,
does he appoint a vice president, or is there somebody in line that gets automatically?
Yeah.
Do you know?
I think it must be, right? It can't just be the Speaker of the House is now the vice president. I don't think it works that way. But
yeah, I wish you were a producer. You could look this up for us. But
yeah,
but you're a co-host now.
I'm just co-host now. It's like my job.
But yeah, yeah,
wait. So who slips into my old seat? Is this do I have to call up Cotillo?
You might have to call up because you can't post and scrub your own podcast.
Right. Yeah. No, that'd be torture. Listening to a whole hour of this voice. I'm gonna call up Kevin Cotillo. Kevin, thanks, buddy. Pitching hit for me on this one. So
love it. Anyways, we were gonna start talking about the gifts, you know, what season long gifts did we get this season? Your gift is Hurley's son cutting his finger and you being on the show. But what other gifts did you get this season? Like what about this season do you look back on and be like, you know, this was a big reason why I've been successful. First of all, have you made any championship games or do you have any shot at winning money?
I do. So I'm in four dynasty leagues and made the playoffs in three, got eliminated in two this last week, and went through and won. So I'm going to the dance in one out of four.
Okay.
And yeah, this year I would have been fine. Not, you know, not making the playoffs, whatever. It's such a random year. We all would want an asterisk this year anyway. So I feel like winning it all still won't have the same luster as it usually would. So I didn't go all out, I would say, with my teams this year. I didn't try to make big moves to try to go for it all, nor did I try to punt anywhere. I just kind of rode the wave and let the chips fall where they may.
Do you typically cash in your chips and go for it?
I usually don't need to. The teams that I've, you know, had for a while, they've matured. So I always constantly have fresh talent behind like my studs. So mm-hmm. like, you know, my home league, the longest running, I mean, I have a pretty stacked team. I would say I have a 1A and a 1B team. Like my 1B could compete in the league, you know, and do okay.
How many teams?
14 teams.
Okay. So that's hard to do.
Yeah.
It's hard to, in a 10 team league, you can get a 1B team. It gets significantly harder as you go up the rung. So that's pretty impressive at 14 teams.
Well, what it is it's a dedication to a philosophy of mine. Actually, it's what I do as I approach the draft season. And that's usually to trade away a first round pick, but I do it so often that, you know, I trade it for next year's first rounder plus like a second rounder plus a piece. Sometimes that's a player, but I often do like the one and two for this year's one, you know, and I constantly do that. So I'm always like way ahead in picks. In fact, it snowballs so much that I end up having to sell like packages of picks for, you know, either upgrades. Studs, like I'll upgrade or cash in on a big stud. But usually it's like I'm reconverting those into a higher value first rounder.
So you're taking advantage of the time value of money.
Always. Yeah. So yeah, it works out. And then I do need to hit on the players that I do select. So, you know, I end up selling one, but I have one from the previous year, right? It's perpetual like that. And then, I've been doing pretty good lately.
So essentially, you've created a pyramid scheme.
I did. Yeah, I call it the banker. That's what I call it. I named it and everything. And I followed
it. You named it. So hold on. Let me get this straight. You've held out for 196 episodes with a pyramid scheme. And now you're laying it on us after Jackson Hurley cuts open his finger and you step into the VP role. Is that what I'm understanding?
I've been sitting on that one golden topic that, yeah, in case I was called up. So
there you go. And once again, Destiny, like this was just happened to be the topic. You might have had to step in and start talking about, you know, players. Like if this was normally in the middle of the season, but once you get into the playoffs, there's really not much content. There's not a lot of, I mean, most leagues are halted in trade. So we kind of get into more philosophy stuff. So this is just meant to be.
I love it. The banker. I mean, the banker, it's predicated on your league being able to, first of all, buy into rookies. You know, not every league is rookie crazy.
I mean,
most leagues. And then also it's predicated on timing. You have to be patient, first of all, right? Because most of the time picks are burning a hole in someone's pocket, right? So you got to wait for the right time to sell those, and you have to target the right teams that need them the most, right? Because the teams that sell them all the time, like they never have picks. Those are the ones you want to start with because they're always going to mortgage their future. So you might have to be extra patient for that, you know, first rounder plus that could be 2 years from the present for that to come around. But eventually those will gain value over time. There's the banker, right? It's perpetual value. It's money working for your money in the form of picks, and it hardly ever goes wrong unless I were to maybe one day cash in on that and I completely bombed on my picks, which has happened over the 11 years that I've had this team. So Tavon Austin's probably the best example of that, where I took him 101 the year he came out. Yeah. We were all enamored with small wide receivers at that time. It was, you know, the Wes Welkers and the Edelmans of the world were ruling, you know, Antonio Brown. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's tough. I tell you what, I've done what you're saying, but I haven't actually done it to where I made it a religious strategy. I try to trade my first if I can, but I guess I've never considered it as I'm going to make sure that I trade my first for multiple pieces over and over for future pieces over and over again. Because unlike you, I like watching the college game, right? And I get, I get fixated on players that I really like.
Yeah.
Where I know that you're not a big college football fan. I mean, I believe from knowing you,
no,
you will watch the games, but you don't obsess over college football.
Absolutely. If it's on, I will sit there and watch. I'm aware of like the big matchups that are coming up because, you know, I'm on Twitter. I've got my eyes open. But at the same time, I went to a D3 school, so I have no allegiance whatsoever to any relevant teams out there. So it's, you know, me and my friends, I think, are all like that because of that reason. If it was, you know, if I was going to, you know, even like Northwestern or something, somewhere close to here that's relevant, it'd be a different story.
I think that actually plays into a really big advantage for guys like you, where, you know, guys like myself, and I'm actually pretty good at staying unbiased. But if I like a player and I feel like they've fallen in value, fall in the draft and they're good values, and I believe in the player, I have a hard time passing on that player. For what I do is, if I get to a spot where I don't feel like I love the guys there, but I like a guy, you know, that I feel I can get three or four picks later, I don't draft the player too early. I just try to move down three or four spots and collect those pieces.
Yeah.
So that's when I'm reacting to your strategy, the banker strategy. But I will tell you this. Moving forward, I will take one league because I'm a big believer and I'm always trying to try new things, right? I'm going to try to be the banker in one of my leagues. And I don't care who falls to me at any point in time, I'm going to start implementing the banker strategy. And obviously this is going to be something that's going to take 3 or 4 years, but I'm going to let you know how it goes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. No, please do. Let me know. That's the thing of it, right? You can't want and need that pick the first year. You absolutely have to sell it, but you will. And I know you pretty well and your strategies. You're always going to get that something on top that requires that strategy to really be successful.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's easy though. How easy is it to sell, like, you know, let's say the 108 for either a later first rounder and a second, a future second even, or, you know, the following year's first and a second? It's very easy. We've all done that. You know, yeah. And people get desperate, you know, then they get enamored around rookie fever time, and, you know, and it's cyclical. That's the beauty of it. It's sustainable because it's always going to be like that.
Yeah. No, you bring up a good point. It definitely makes you think. No, that's good. Any other gifts that you've gotten this holiday season?
I would like to thank Santa for AJ Brown for not. I mean, he has been nicked up, but still fighting through it. And, you know, the few targets that he is getting, you know, as compared to, you know, double digit Deontay Johnson guy over there. I mean, he's done pretty good considering. So thanks, AJ. Appreciate it, buddy.
You don't want to thank Deontay?
I think Deontay after tonight. I need to see how he did. Yeah, because apparently he responded well to his benching, but I need to see that on the field.
Okay. Well, one thing, I guess the thing that I'm most grateful for in Dynasty, and I'm not going to, outside of Deontay just coming to life this season, even though he kind of had a hiccup last week, but and King Henry just being an animal. I'm going to take it a little different. I'm going to kind of give my appreciation to the format that I like the most. Mm. I cannot stand head-to-head matchups in the playoffs. It drives me absolutely crazy. In the more and more leagues that I'm in that have all play feature in the playoffs, the more and more I like them. Mm-hmm. I think my most ideal, and I don't have any leagues like this. I had one league like this, and it's no longer in service. But it was, you take your average points for the season, and then that's what you're starting weekly number is in the playoffs. So to give you an example of that, let's say I'm the highest point getter in the league and I got 150 points. Every week in the playoffs, I start at 150 points. So if you come into the league, let's say you sneak into the playoffs at 120 points, you're 30 points in the hole to me when the playoffs start. And the reason why I like that the most is the 1 week volatility, like the variables that happen, whether it be injuries, whether it be just bad matchups, you know, it's anything can happen in that 1 week where the team that's been great for 13 seasons or 13 weeks goes into the first playoff game of the season and they run into unfavorable scheduling, a positive COVID test, an injury during the game, and then they lose to a team that didn't deserve to even get in the playoffs in the first place, and they get in. Like, I'm a big believer in the champion should be the best team throughout the course of the season.
Yeah.
And the more we can make it to where the best team wins, not like give them the championship if you win the regular season, but give them the gold star, like something to say, we've recognized the first 13 weeks, because not a lot of the times the seeds don't always account for that. Let's say you're the highest point getter in the season and you finish third, you don't even get a bye, which happens a lot, actually.
Sure, it happens a lot to me.
Yeah, and then you play, while these two other schmucks are in the semifinals, automatically you have to fight, even though you fought all season to be the top point getter. Now you have to fight against a six seed who may have hit pay dirt with some players, like just their players turned on at the end of the season. And now you got some injuries. Now you're the dog in the fight. And it really bothers me. So I just like the way that it just balances things out. And by the end of the season, the best team throughout the course of the full season is actually won.
Yeah.
But since I don't have any teams like that, I do like the all play feature because it also takes those variables out. Because now you have four teams with two and a bye in week 14. Those four teams are battling for two spots. So if you get matched up, and how often, you can probably attest to this too, and I think most listeners could too, how often do you get matched up with the second highest point getter in the playoffs? So you're 1 and 2, or the first highest, and you're second, and then the two schmucks below you guys have 90 points, and one of them gets by. So it's like, just the more you can eliminate the variables.
Yeah. I almost want to sneak in sometimes as the wild card, you know, for that reason. Like, if you're confident that you have a team that can go deep in the playoffs, and as a wild card, that's not always the case, but sometimes you have one that you're just like, oh, I know this is going to, because of the seeding, I know this is going to disrupt some stuff. And it, you know, sometimes, yeah, that's part of the excitement. And I know you're saying, like, a lot of times the highest point getter, as you're putting it, that it's just not reflected in, you know, the playoff structure. How often does the team getting the bye, you know, not end up being one of the highest point scoring teams?
A lot more than it should. And it, I mean, this, I've had a league 2 years in a row that I actually co-own with Kevin Cotillo, where we've been the top point getter. I think the first season, last season, we got a bye. This season, we didn't get a bye, but we would have if we'd have been another division. And this is another thing. I hate divisions. I think divisions is the stupidest thing in fantasy football. but we didn't get the bye again this, and we got bounced in the first round because we just, you know, we had Christian McCaffrey the whole season. We still finished the top point getter, but we just didn't come through in that week 14 matchup, and now we're out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And it's like two seasons in a row where we have nothing to show for it, and we're the top point getter. Like, that's what's annoying about it. And that's I want to eliminate as much luck as possible in my fantasy leagues. Because if we are doing this, and the cream should rise to the top, and the more luck that's involved in the outcomes of the games, the matchups, the less skill that's involved in getting there, like in winning the title. So it's like, if everybody wants to eliminate luck, I'm guessing a lot of people would try to say, in an ideal situation, we would have 100% skill and 0% luck. So why wouldn't we set up leagues as close to determining skill-based and eliminating luck as much as possible? Like, why are we against that?
Well, I think a lot of it goes hand in hand with the gambling side of things. We don't go to the casino expecting to win every game, right? Those games are structured to have a fair amount of chance, more chance than anything, really.
But why is blackjack the most popular game?
It's good. I like where you're going with that. But at the same time, though, roulette is exciting, is it not? To be able to, you know, do a high risk, high reward situation might be appealing too. So maybe it's just finding the right balance for your league. What are you willing to accept? You know, do you want 100% of the time the strongest team winning your championship, or do you want to infuse an element of chaos that kind of throws it all off, that you just cannot possibly predict? I've always kind of felt like this game should do more mirroring the NFL than not. And that's a lot to do with just, you know, even the scoring structure. Like, I'm still in a 6 point per touchdown league. Six in the NFL, they are 6 points. When they change that, that's when I'll change my league. You know?
Okay. And yeah.
I am still using kickers. I am still using defense. That those arguments that they're irrelevant, I don't think hold water, because they're still in the game of football. And that's what I'm after. I'm after the highest intensity GM experience I can, while also putting my own money on the line. Right.
Yeah.
So that's me. And I know there are legions of people going right now, like, screw that. This is there's, you know, the operative word here is fantasy football and fantasy football. We're not the NFL, and fine. There, I'm willing to give some of that back too. Like, my league still does bonus points. You know, it just depends on how much of a purist you want to be, really. And that's why you try to gravitate towards the people that think like you and stick to the leagues that you really gel with people, because you know, people will like to tinker too, by the way. And I know you're one of those people.
What was that? Tinker with what?
The rules. You don't typically seem to sit still when it comes to that stuff. And I think Hurley is in the same boat with you where it can get stagnant. So you like to mix it up. You know, your disrespect league, I think, is probably one of the prime examples there in recent memory where you're just like, well, you know what? We're just going to do something different. And I find myself more on let's change the rules if they're broken. More than, you know, I'm bored. Let's change it up kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, the disrespect, and I see what you're saying. The disrespect for me is more about, I don't want to police leagues.
No, me either. I hate it.
It sucks. So the disrespect was born so I don't have to police leagues. Cause if you don't own your first round pick, you're not tanking. Yeah. And if you're tanking, then you're an idiot. Like that's, then you probably should be playing another league. Like if you're tanking without your first round pick and you're just throwing games.
Yeah, no, you're a clown. Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta get out.
So it's like the disrespect was born just for me to say, A, I want to bring animosity. I want to bring rivalries. I want to bring life to the league. There's no better way than bringing life to the league than having people essentially, you force people to attack other people's teams.
Yeah.
In a sense, because they're drafting them in the disrespect draft.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm in the Minnesota Made League. Thor, who's been on our show before,
mm-hmm.
He actually, we were texting back and forth and I actually tweeted about this, but he didn't, his first comment to me when I, during the text was more about, he was less concerned about the title. And he was more concerned about rubbing it in the face of the person that took him at 102.
Yeah. I could see that.
You know, and it's like that he's held onto that for 6 months that somebody took him 102 and he's been salty about it. Yeah. And every week he's trying to win just to rub it in the other person's face. Now he's in the title game. You know, it's like. That's what I love about the disrespect. And it's I'm always looking when I have draft people in disrespect, I'm always looking at their matchups. I'm like, my games might be over, but I'm rooting against them as well. It just adds so many layers to the league. And the only thing that it sucks, the only thing that takes away from it a little bit is when bad teams disrespect draft good teams. So now the team finishes. Yeah. You know, 101, but they own the 110 or the 112. And it's like, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. They're digging holes. And that's really why I couldn't ever do it, at least in my home league. I could absolutely.
It's not common though.
Yeah. It's a parity killer. If you are interested in balance and, you know, bad teams getting better and good teams somewhere, you know, regressing and, you know, having a hard time eventually, then, you know, you do not implement the disrespect draft. It's not for you. It is definitely more for a hardcore fan base that wants a little more flavor, you know, a little more spice.
I will say I have not, to be completely fair with you, I have not seen a disrespect draft to where a team hasn't been able to rebound from having the 101 or 102 and also having a bad, a good pick. So like the 108, 109, 110. Most dynasty owners feel like they're confident enough to where they can overcome that type of issue. Right. So it's not the end of the world. That is the one downside. But at the same time, there's downsides to everything. Like there is no perfect solution, but I do enjoy the animosity that's created with the disrespect draft. I think it's a really fun, leaving aside the tanking prevention that's great about it.
I love it. I do like
the animosity.
You relish in the conflict. You love it.
It's great. It's so fun to watch people actually get like frustrated. Like, a little piece of them dies when they get drafted in the disrespect draft. Even the person that, even if you get drafted 10th and there's still two other teams, like somebody, like enough, the entire league thinks that you're the third best team, it's still offensive. You know, like, you still find a way to be offended. Like, what? Like, I'm the best team. Like, you know, it's like, oh my God, this guy's an idiot. Like, how did he not pick this guy? This guy's team's way worse. It's like, there's always a way for people to get offended.
Yeah. So, it's true. But, well, I mean, yeah, I can see that. All outcomes aside of how that shakes out, I can just see the animosity side being a problematic, you know, twist to your season too. Like, if you're all buddies, that's great. But I probably fight with my buddies more than I do strangers, you know, or even acquaintances on Twitter. That kind of stuff can get ugly.
Yeah, but it's more like, it's more for the fun of it. You know, it's not,
you hope. Yeah.
It's not, sure, you might have a league where two people might hate each other, but they might hate each other, but they won't select the person in a disrespect draft because they don't like each other. They'll truly try to make their team better. Like, you're not going to pick somebody that's got a stacked team just because you don't like them.
Yeah.
Because like, you're screwing yourself.
Well, you know what it's like? It's like in normal ways, like if you were selling your first rounder away, you no longer own it, and you know, maybe your team starts to not do as well as you had hoped. You're like, oh man, I don't want to basically had just given away the 101 for, you know, whatever, Larry Fitzgerald, what doesn't matter, pick something. I now need to make some other moves so that I don't look like such a chump and at least get back to even, right? Whatever yeah. value you theoretically would have lost or are losing.
For sure. For sure. Quick question for you.
Yeah.
So this past, or I guess 16 hours ago, I want to say,
mm-hmm.
yeah, about 16 hours ago, the New York Jet fan base lost Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. Ooh.
So now we go, and Jacksonville is now the proud owner of a brand new Trevor Lawrence.
Oh boy.
Now, assuming it stays pat and Jacksonville ends up with Trevor Lawrence,
mm-hmm.
A, does that make Trevor Lawrence value even higher? One. And two, are you going to go gangbusters and try to buy? Like, because I picked up a bunch of DJ Chark this season.
Ooh.
And I'm so much more excited about my DJ Chark shares now.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Like, that was a huge win. That's a win. That's a huge win. I think Hurley touched on this too in a tweet, and I feel the exact same way. When players get drafted, when quarterbacks get drafted to teams that have, you know, these certain receivers, like, the entire receiving core gains value because people are now expecting,
of course,
them to ball out, right?
Yeah.
So that is now, it went from the Mimses of the world to now it's the LaViscas and the Charks.
And the Keelan Coles.
And the key, yes.
Yeah, but dude, this is, by and large, the best outcome for him because he's coming into an actual running game too. You've got that. When defenses have to respect the run game, your rookie quarterback is going to have such an easier time transitioning. So, yeah, of course his value goes up.
In a weird way, does this change James Robinson's value? Like, are you more – so let me ask you this. Do you think Jacksonville will go in and try to kind of overhaul everything where they bring in Trevor Lawrence, they draft another receiver, they draft a running back, and they say, okay, we want to make sure that Trevor Lawrence is like similar to what since he did with Burrow, they drafted T. Higgins for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they didn't draft the running back for him, but they drafted T. Higgins for him. Do you think Jacksonville can come in and draft a running back as well as a wide receiver for Trevor Lawrence? Does that change anything, or do you think the odds of them drafting a running back to supplant or compete with or split carries with James Robinson changed with the Trevor Lawrence pickup?
I think it absolutely changes so that they have to use their first round pick on him.
Yeah.
I think that James Robinson gives them at least another year to think about that. Yeah. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I don't even think you need to even get a receiver, honestly. I think you've got your receiving core. Maybe go out and get a tight end in the third or something.
That's the common sense approach. But these franchises, I feel like they're whenever they bring in a quarterback, and it's not always, but I think when with a quarterback of Trevor Lawrence's magnitude, they just bring in, similar to what they did with Baker Mayfield. They had Chubb and Duke Johnson, but they still brought in Kareem Hunt. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So, like, they're adding to just the dynamite. I mean, they brought in OBJ. So, like, they just try to stack their offense. When you have that guy, like, I know with Kansas City, they had Clyde, but they figured, well, we have Patrick Mahomes, and we can continue just to dominate offense. Let's bring in Le'Veon Bell. Just more talent. You look at Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Like, you can never have too much talent. Just bring in Antonio Brown. Who cares? And it's like, I feel like the league, there's a lot of teams that are just saying, you know what? We have talent, but we want more. If we surround X player with more talent, our team's going to be better.
Well, what about Jax's offensive line, though? I mean, keeping him upright's got to be a priority.
Yeah.
Over the running back.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, I hear you. They're going to make moves that are probably a little more what would appear as emotional, what it was more actually like, you know, business decisions to, you know, emphasize the new toy they just got. You know,
yes.
maybe it's like, you know, pumping them up in the marketing department by making him seem flashier with other weapons. I think that's kind of what you're getting at. But yeah, I would hope if you just saw what unfolded this last weekend and you're Jacksonville and you've got this shot, you don't blow it because you have before. Quarterback wise with Bortles and, you know, and I mean, even Leftwich didn't work out. I mean, really, you know, he didn't take them very far in the playoffs. They are due for a rebuild of the most purest order, you know, the traditional one where you if you're going to build around the quarterback, do it right. You start in the trenches. You've already got him weapons to throw to. You already have a running back. You know, make it so that this guy can be successful the first year. Don't, if your aim is to, like, you know, accentuate your shiny new toy, don't tarnish him the first couple of years.
Like since he did with Burrow and didn't give enough support on the offensive line and got his ass crushed.
Oh my God. That list is endless. I mean,
but that's the thing.
Mariota's on that list, in my opinion. You know, they didn't, and they got Corey Davis, but Corey did not. I mean, we know he is now a phenomenal wide receiver too. He is not an alpha. He can't do it alone. And we had to unfortunately suffer through that, us Mariota fans, for 3 years until. So yeah.
Yeah. What about Sam Darnold? Like this obviously, do you even think he gets replaced? Like, do you think they go Justin Fields? Do the Jets go Justin Fields, or do they actually roll with Sam Darnold? He's 23 years old. He's still younger than Burrow.
I think there's a good chance that they'll just, you know, because they have so many holes to plug. Don't build around Darnold though, you know, just build for Darnold's replacement and get some weapons, for Christ's sake. I mean, poor Crowder is the
Darnold
only
hater.
Guy out there. Huh?
You're a Darnold hater.
Darnold,
like,
hater?
You don't believe in the Darnold.
I think Darnold is not getting a fair shot right now. But at the same time, I think we've seen enough. That's kind of the thing with quarterbacks. You get 3 years. I've noticed that. If you haven't sustained elite production for at least one of those 3 years, then you're done. No one's going to give you the benefit of the doubt. You know, Jameis went through that too. And, you know, he even flirted with being elite in some seasons. And they still let him go. It's not easy, man.
Yeah, I you know, I'm a Darnold believer.
Okay.
You know, but I mean, I look at this and say, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, look at the quarterback carousel next year, even with Mariota last year and Winston, where Mariota lost his job and Winston also lost his job technically.
Yeah.
Because he didn't get re-signed. Those were two, like, in dynasty formats, these were guys you were paying pretty pennies for
at the
quarterback position.
Yes,
and they're now they're backups.
Well, for now.
And it's like Jameis Winston, I think, is still 26 years old.
Yeah, but if Darnold deserves another go at it, even you know within the same organization with other weapons, then I think some of these other guys that we perceive to have more talent should absolutely get a second go. And I don't think they will, is the reality of the situation. I don't see Jameis getting a starting gig. I just don't.
I do.
Where do you see him?
I do. I just think there's enough of the quarterback carousel to go around to where, and he's talented enough to where a team can say he has the foundation and we can fix him. Like we can fix the turnover issues. Like we can work with him on that. Like these people are egotistical, you know, they're egomaniacs. Like they think they can do everything. So it's like, just like Wentz, if he gets traded, he's going to get traded and he's going to be a starter somewhere. Now I get it. Wentz is different than Jameis because we've seen more of Jameis than we've seen of Wentz. So like Wentz's decline has been a lot smaller and like his volatility has been a lot that we haven't had that many years of volatility like we have with Jameis. But you know, you look at the Darnolds, you look at the Wentzes, you look at the Winstons, if you want to put Mariota in there, which I personally don't, but if you want to, for the sake of the argument, like there's enough franchises that need a quarterback to where even if Justin Fields goes to the Jets, somebody will need a Sam Darnold, a Carson Wentz. You look at even Matt Stafford, they're flirting with him being traded. So now you look at the franchises that are in need of a quarterback long term. There's a lot. I mean, you look at New Orleans. Breeze isn't going to be there forever. He's on his last legs. I know Brady's still cooking. Let's say that he sticks there. Let's say Josh Rosen's the future there because he's elite. The Bears definitely need a quarterback.
Uh-huh.
You know, at some point, Phillip Rivers, Big Ben looks like he's starting to fade.
Yeah, I guess he Vikings hasn't looked, too.
Nah, Cousins is fine. I mean, people make a big deal of Cousins now.
Wow, you think he sticks? I don't think he sticks.
I do. Look at San Fran. San Fran's a perfect example. I think Jimmy Garoppolo's cheeks. Like,
yeah, but his is more contract related, though. He's got some money tied up.
Yeah, but you can get, I mean, look at the same. I'd have to look into it. If you can get rid of Wentz's contract, which Philly can, I looked at it, you can get rid of Jimmy's contract. And I'm guessing there's a team that would also trade for Jimmy.
I don't know. See, I think the time, if San Fran doesn't give him another year, and I think they will, if they didn't, I think his time might be up. That's just how I think the league in general is just very fickle. They want to get their franchise guy and they want to be done with it for a decade. And they'll keep turning it over until they get that guy. Stafford is probably the anomaly there. I mean, you can consider him a franchise guy because of his tenure, but you would not consider him to be like, you know, an all-time great that, you know, would be worthy of a 10-year career in one place.
I think he is if he had a good franchise. Like he's been the worst franchise in NFL history. Like
Me and you, we're simpatico with when it comes to Stafford. I like Stafford too. I like his skill set. I like his tenacity, his preparation, his attitude towards everything. He does everything right. But he has very little success to show for it. And he has had weapons. So there's some other stuff going on. But the point being, most teams will not give too many guys like Stafford that kind of leeway over and over and over again.
I think it says a lot about his talent, Mo. You're looking at the wrong way.
Well, no. because if you know it, if you remember the times where his contracts were up, he was always consistently the best option available. So they always retained him. The alternatives were not good. So it always made sense. And that's to his credit. So believe me, I like Stafford, but he has no rings. He has very few. I mean, how many playoffs wins does he have?
I think he has one or none.
Yeah, it's real damn low. So you see what I'm saying. You're right. I think there are going to be some vacancies coming up here. But I think it's also at the very same time crowded. There's Yeah, I think Mariota is a second chance. So why not Jameson?
Jameson, yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. So, I mean, we'll see. I will say for people, like, I'm going to try to actively buy Wentz. I'm going to try to actively buy Darnold. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to actively buy Jameis. I feel like Jameis had a little bit of value bump there because, like, oh, he's a nice guy, and now it's Taysom. I think Jameis is very easily acquire. You can easily acquire him.
Yeah.
I'm buying the Charks and the Viscas with now Trevor Lawrence. And, heck, they might win a game and it might go back to the Jets, but
sure. It's worth
it
trying.
It is what it is. Yeah.
It's worth, because if it's not him, it's Fields, right? Presumably.
Correct.
So why not? Yeah, keep going.
Yep. So, but yeah. Well, do you have anything to add?
No. I think I was just killing time for an hour. How'd I do?
I thought you did great. I mean, there's, you know, with this postseason, you know, with the finals coming up, there's really not much trading going on.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much player news. Like, it's all just kind of filtering in and out, that type of thing. Like, there's nothing that's like, oh, this is new news that we need to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hit on the Tony Pollard thing earlier in the show, and that's kind of, I think, the fun one. But yeah, and Jalen Hurts looks legit. I don't think Carson Wentz getting his job. I don't think he's getting his job back after that performance. So
definitely not.
That ship has sailed. You can't buy him. You can't buy Hurts. So I think the next logical step is to buy Wentz, because now with every good game Hurts has, Wentz's value goes down.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a couple of weeks if you do plan on getting Wentz. He's not going anywhere. It's not like the team's going to sign him. So, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, well, thanks for stepping. I thought you did a marvelous job, personally. I don't know if you've been taking Hurley notes while you've been, or Izzy notes while you've been sitting in the producer box, but there's a good chance that Hurley's been replaced. We just need to find that producer on Twitter.
He's been Tannehill'd. It's done.
It's over. Actually, you can say he's been Mariota. You are Tannehill.
That's just a compliment. So, I mean, at this point, I don't know which one's better.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, that's all she wrote for 196. Hopefully, Hurley will be on for 197, assuming there's no more friendly fire in the house.
Yeah.
I found out the story. He was trying. Let's let him do it.
Let him tell the story. Let him tell the story. So we don't want to mangle the details.
Oh, I see what you did there. God, so you needed an hour to come up with the Hurleyism right there.
Boom, baby.
Love it. We'll be back for 196. You can follow our producer and our new co-host at DTC_JohnM, or is it John Mosier? No, it's John M.
No, John _ Mosier. Or
DTC at DTC _ John Mosier.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You don't even know your own handle.
And for me, at DTC _ Izzy E, and you can follow our former host and fearless leader at FF Hercules. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye. Let's go in DTC. We trust they know. Let's go.